We could wish that we had as good of a intelligence as the king of Jericho. Immediately he knew the spies. He knew what they were up to. He knew where they came from, and he knew what they were trying to do. And he knew where they went. He had all that information about the spies. And you might say, well, he didn't have phone. He didn't have surveillance. He didn't have electronic surveillance. He didn't have, you know, able to tap into the phone lines or the this or the that. He didn't have any of that. But he was able to find out where these spies, he knew where the spies were coming from, and he knew what they were doing and knew what they were up to. You see it there in verse 2 of chapter 2. And it was the king of Jericho saying, behold, men came from the sons of Israel, have come here to search out the land. He knew what they were coming about. And he knew they were going to take a report back. You know, how strong they was, where the land was, how strong the city was. And he knew where they went, so they went right away. They went to the house of Rahab. They went to the house of Rahab immediately. They knew where they went. Don't you wish you and I had that kind of diligent and informed alertness about impending evil and things that were coming our way? Don't you wish we could see some of the things in our own lives that were coming on us? Yeah. King of Jericho, very well informed. And I wish the United States had better surveillance for its enemies and things internal and external. Rahab's faith was definitely firm. You could see that in chapter 2. We saw this last time when we... But she said, you know, we heard about all that Israel had done. We've heard that you came through the Red Sea. We heard that you had defeated, how you came out of Egypt and you defeated the two kings of the Amorites and so on. And then in verse 11, and when we heard it, our hearts melted and no courage remained in us any longer because of you. For the eternal, your God, he is God in heaven above and earth beneath. So immediately, her faith was very, very firm. We have to ask ourselves, is our faith firm? So she knew. And in verse 9, she said to the men, I know that the Eternal has given you the land. Notice that. And that the terror of you has fallen on us. And that all the inhabitants of the land have melted away before you. I know that. I know the situation here. She told the spies what she knew. Our faith has to be based on something firm. The Apostle Paul wrote to Timothy in 2 Timothy 1, verse 12. He said, 2 Timothy 1, verse 12, for this reason I also suffer these things, but I am not ashamed, for I know whom I have believed. I know whom I have believed, and I am convinced that he is able to guard what I have entrusted to him until that day. I know in whom I have believed. In 1 John chapter 5 and verse 13, John writes, these things I have written to you who believe in the name of the Son of God, in order that you may know that you have eternal life. Our faith has to rest on something firm. It can't be just, you know, ethereal, rest on nothing. It has to rest on something firm. And she had that firm foundation of her faith. On top of that, she had courage. Can you imagine the courage Rahab had? What if she were caught assisting, hiding these spies? What do you think would have happened to her and her entire family? Probably killed, hung, destroyed. Her father and mother, who lived there with her, would have been killed. So she had a lot of courage. I'm gonna hide, but I know this is it, and I know this is right, and I'm gonna take the chance, because if King finds out that I've helped you, you know, it's over for me. It's over for my family. But she had the courage. She had courage in the face of doing something she believed in, and she knew, I know your God is the God of heaven and earth, and I know your God has given you this land. She knew that. It's a fair question. It's a fair question to ask this question. Why in the New Testament, in the book of Hebrews, chapter 11, does it talk about the faith of Rahab the harlot? Why in the book of James, chapter 2, verse 25, where it says, "And in the same way was not Rahab the harlot also justified by works, made righteous by her works, when she received the messengers and sent them away?" Now, it's a fair question to ask. Why, even in the New Testament, you're talking about, a thousand years later, how come you're talking about Rahab the harlot? Some people say, well, that's because she was bad and it never went away. Now, I think we could safely say she wasn't a harlot anymore. She had repented. She'd been doing things. We'll talk a little bit about that in a minute. I think she had repented of her immoral practice. She talked about, she hid the spies up on the top of her roof where the stalks of flax were drying on her roof. Flax, it took a lot of work to deal with flax. She had to work hard working with flax to gather it, to dry it, to then later to spin it into cloth, like you spin cotton, you have to spin that into cloth or some form of vellum. Working with flax then was associated with women of honorable character, according to the book of Proverbs, chapter 31, verse 13, where it says, "She seeks wool and flax and works willingly with her hands." That was an honorable thing. So here was Rahab with all this flax up on her roof, hiding. She hid them, the spies, among the flax. So why? Why does it keep saying Rahab the harlot? I don't think, some people would say, well, that's because God's never going to forget the bad you did. Well, I don't think that's true. I think God does forget the bad we did. God washes it under the away. And as God says in the book of Proverbs, Psalm, as far as east is from west, he has put your iniquities away from you. As a father, pities his children, and God forgives us of these things. So why Rahab the harlot? Well, in the Old and New Testament times, people had sort of certain names. It was Judas Iscariot. It was Simon the Zealot. Now, the Zealots were a particular group in the time of Jesus. They were the Zealots who were there. You might compare them to, this vicious group that wants, going to enforce everything on everybody, the Zealots. In the book of Luke, chapter 6, verse 15, Matthew, Thomas, talking about some of the disciples, and Simon, who was called the Zealot. Simon the Zealot. Now, was he still a member of the Zealots? No. He became a disciple of Jesus. He was one of the men who followed and became apostles of Jesus. But he was still called Simon the Zealot. They talked about James the Less, James the son of Alphaeus, and this one and that one. These different terms. You even have in the book of Matthew, chapter 26 and verse 6. Now, when Jesus entered, when Jesus was in Bethany at the home of Simon the leper. Now, he wasn't a leper anymore. He had been healed. He came home. Jesus wouldn't be walking into the home of, being around this leper, and this leper is sitting. The lepers all went over and isolated themselves. But he was called Simon the leper, even though he was healed. Because they didn't have last names. They didn't have social security numbers. They didn't have driver's licenses with your picture on it. Who are they going to identify? Well, this guy, who is he? Who was Jesus called? Jesus, he was either called the son of Joseph. He was either called Jesus of Nazareth. Remember? Who is this Jesus? Oh, the one from Nazareth. There may have been other Joshuas and other Jesus. So, yeah, I don't think it was pejorative. I don't think it was mean-spirited, and I don't think God called her that just because. And her faith was so great Her faith was so incredible that she's mentioned in the book of Hebrews. We already read that last time. In Hebrews chapter 11, verse 31, you know, by faith, Rahab, you know, was delivered. And then we have this strange little verse in the book of Matthew. Nowhere else does it say this. It's in the book of Matthew, chapter 1, dropping down to verse 5. Salmon was the father of Boaz by Rahab. Now, you can't find that in the Old Testament anywhere. You can't. You can't find that in places in the Old Testament where it says that. You can look in the books of Chronicles. You can look in the books of the Kings. You can look at all these genealogical tables. But here in Matthew, under inspiration, as we're going to take it from Matthew, Matthew writes, and you can't find it in Luke. Mark doesn't mention it. But here you're in the book of Matthew, chapter 1. And who's the Gospel of Matthew written for? It's written for the Jewish people because he puts a lot of emphasis on making Jesus sure that Jesus is the Christ and explaining that the Old Testament scriptures point to Jesus as the Christ. He does a lot of that. But here in the book of Matthew, chapter 1, verse 5, this little statement, Salmon was the father of Boaz by Rahab. Boaz was the father of Obed by Ruth. Obed was the father of Jesse. Jesse was the father of David the king. Again, which David are you talking about? David the king. Which Rahab are you talking about? Oh yeah, Rahab the harlot. And David was the father of Solomon by Bathsheba, who had been the wife of Uriah. Now actually, that's the New American Standard Version. They put the word Bathsheba in there, but the Bathsheba is not in the Greek. Her name is not there. It's by her, the wife of Uriah, by the wife of Uriah. Notice they still call her the wife of Uriah. Notice that statement. She's still the wife of Uriah, even though David took her for a wife after Uriah died. She became David's wife. But she was still who? If you want to know what Bathsheba she was, oh, she was the Bathsheba, the wife of Uriah. How would you like that? You marry a woman, you know, I married her. I married Marilyn. She's still the wife of Joel. You know, thanks. And now, how would you like to be, okay, you have the father of Boaz, Solomon, by Rahab. Then the father of Boaz was the father of Obed. Obed's grandmother was Rahab. Jesse's great-grandmother was Rahab. And David's great-great-grandmother was Rahab. Hi, we went over to see my grandmother, Rahab the harlot, the other day. And, you know, and she just prepared a very nice luncheon for everybody. She was so gracious. It's Rahab the harlot. I mean, she was Rahab. Now, why is it that Matthew went way, way out of his way to say that in the genealogical tables leading to David and the genealogical tables from David to Jesus Christ, Jesus of Nazareth, that there was a Canaanite woman who had been a harlot. There was a Moabite woman, Ruth, who was converted. There was another woman who either was an Israelite or happened to be a Hittite. So either she was married to a Hittite as an Israelite or she was a Hittite herself, because it was Uriah the Hittite, right? It tells you what Uriah he was. He was called the Hittite. Why does that said like that? Brethren, genealogical tables, race, who your fathers were, who your grandfathers were, who your great-grandfathers were, who your great-great-great-grandfathers were, who your great... doesn't mean much. It's who you are. It's the character you have. It's what you have become. It's the person you are inside. Not, first of all, you shouldn't get any credit for who your fathers were, okay? Your great-grandfathers. Oh, my grandfathers came over on the Mayflower. Well, that's great. Now, you're a thief, you're a cheat, you're a liar, but your parents came over on the Mayflower. Well, that's just wonderful, you know, and you should get all the credit in the world. No, no, no. Or you could say, you know, my dad was a horse thief, my grandfather was a liar and cheat and a gambler and all that, but who are you? Well, I'm a Christian. I love God. I love God's character. I love God's way. I love Jesus Christ. It's you. It's not your parents. It's not race. It's not culture. It's not any of the... it's who you are in character. And Jesus Christ became the Savior of everybody. Every race, every group of people, every culture. He looked back on his lineage. His lineage wasn't absolutely pure. He wasn't pure Israelite. Who's pure Israelite? Who is it? I don't know. Jesus wasn't that. He wasn't pure. He came through. And then you remember one line. You remember the line of Tammuz. There's a terrorist line and two different pharaohs and the other one. Who did they come from? They came because Judah was seduced and actually was willingly went into his daughter-in-law thinking she was a harlot and produced these twins. Kind of almost, you know, violation of all the commands, you know, these various commands in the scriptures. So Jesus Christ is the Father of, he's the Savior of the world. And Matthew put that in there, I believe, deliberately. Salmon was the father of Boaz by Rahab. Boaz was the father of Obed by Ruth. So you have a Canaanite, you have a Moabite, then you have Bathsheba, maybe a Hittite or the wife of a Hittite. And you have the Pharaoh's line. And you have the others. There's another possible issue here. There's a lot of people really wrangle and worry and they stew and they can't seem to get past this. Rahab's lie. Rahab told the spies, giving them a falsehood. Okay? She gave them false information. She gave the king of Jericho's men false information. And she, in fact, lied. They're not here. They went away. While they were lying up in the stocks, and she knew it. Now, there are people who say her lie is never condoned. No lie, no untruth is ever condoned. She would just be, that's evil, and she should be, you know, that was. And yet you don't find any condemnation of that in the scriptures. I do not find any condemnation of that. None. So there are people who perhaps their level of morality is extremely high. I have one person said, well, by Rahab's lie, she limited God's power. Had she told the truth, then God could have come in with extra power and saved them through a miracle of another way. But instead, she lied. She did that, and therefore she got them escaping, limiting God's power. Well, that's nice to say that, but that's not what the story is. The story is she saved their lives and they were grateful for it. They were grateful for it. And they said, if you just don't tell on us, you don't tell about us, we'll spare you and your family. And she wanted them to spare her family. Very, very devoted family woman. Look at chapter 2 of Joshua, dropping down to verse 12. Now, therefore, please swear to me by the Eternal. Swear to me by Yahweh, your God, that since that I have dealt kindly with you, that you will also deal kindly with me and my father's household and give me the pledge of truth. I'm asking you. Now, she was a bargainer of sorts. I mean, she was no dummy. She was, she said, hey, I did this for you. I know you're coming in here. You're going to defeat us. I need to know. I don't want to be killed in this war. I know God's going to give it to you. Spare me and my parents because I did good to you. I did good to you. I deserve something back in return. That's quid pro quo, something in exchange for something else. And then she says in verse 13, and spare my father and my mother and my brothers and my sisters with all who belong to them. If they have any kids, my sister might have a little, I have a little niece or I have a little nephew, spare them and deliver our lives from death. I know you're going to come in here, you're going to slaughter everybody. I want to be delivered. And what do the men say to her in verse 14? So the men said to her, our life for yours. If you do not tell this business of ours, and it shall come about when the Eternal gives us the land, that we will deal kindly and faithfully with you. We'll be as good to you. Now, you have another occasion where people did not tell the truth to the authorities. You know, you have this statement here in the book of Exodus chapter 1, dropping down to verse 15. Exodus chapter 1, then the king of Egypt spoke to the Hebrew midwives, one of whom was named Shipra, and the other's name was Puah. And he said, when you are helping the Hebrew women to give birth and see them upon the birth stool, if it is a son, then you shall put him to death. They give birth to a little boy, just accidentally bang his head or do something, and they won't know. The mother will just say he died, suddenly or something. But if it is a daughter, then she shall live. But listen to verse 17. But the midwives feared Elohim, God, El, and did not do as the king of Egypt had commanded them. Now, they were commanded by the king of Egypt. But let the boys live. They did. They were there. They let them live. So the king of Egypt called for the midwives, and he said to them, why have you done this thing? And let these boys live. He found out they're little boys running around. How come you let these little boys live? And the midwives said to the Pharaoh, well, the Hebrew women are not like the Egyptian women, for they're just so vigorous. They got so strong, and they give birth before the midwife can get to them. They already gave the birth before we got there. And, you're going to try to take a baby from its mother, you're going to fight. And so, no, they already gave their birth. Now, listen to the next. Right, they gave the birth before the midwife can get to them. Verse 20. So God was good to the midwives, and the people multiplied and became very, very mighty. God was good to the midwives, even though they had told an untruth. They told the king of Egypt that we can't get to them. So people can be ever so righteous that every word has to be exactly, even if it meant the death of somebody or the hurt of somebody. Maybe your words, you have to consider what is called the pragmatics of communication, what your words will do to people, what your words will do to you and to do to others. So after they said that, verse 15, let's come back here to verse 15. Then Then she let them down by a rope through the window, for, listen to this, for her house was on the city wall. Okay, there were walls around the city. Her house was on the city wall. It was built into the wall. When she let them down out the window of the wall, they were on the outside. They were back outside the city. So that she was living on the wall, or some translations say in the wall. Her house was built. She was living, so to speak, in the wall. She said to them, "Go to the hill country." Now, the hill country was an area where there was a lot of caves and you could hide in there. Go to the hill country, you see, so that the pursuers will not happen upon you, and hide yourselves there for 3 days until the pursuers return. And they're going to look for you. They're not going to look for more than 3 days. Then afterward, you may go on your way. Get into the hill country. The men said to her, "We shall be free from our oath to you, which you have made us swear." Okay, now, you want us to spare you. We swore that we would. You wanted us to swear by the Eternal. We did it. But we're going to be free from this oath unless, verse 18, when we come into the land, you tie this cord of scarlet thread in the window through which you let us down. In other words, she had a cord. She had a rope. It was bound, you know, round, wrapped around, and that's how you make a rope. You know, they bound these little wide things, and then she let them down with that. And then he said, "Put that back in your window on the wall, okay? Get that rope in your house, put it back on the place, so we'll know that's you. Otherwise, we will be not bound to our statement, okay?" Put this rope and gather to yourself into the house. Get into your house. Your father, your mother, your brothers, and all your family's household. Get them all in there so that they will be safe. They'll be with you. Now, you remember that Lot, when they were going to take Lot out of Sodom, Lot got his two daughters. Could he get his sons-in-law? He couldn't get his sons-in-law. He couldn't persuade them, this is going to be really bad. How about you come in here, you know, get in here with us and get your parents. No, they laughed at him. They thought, there's nothing's going to happen here. Nothing's going to happen. He finally was able to get his daughters and his wife. And of course, his wife turned and looked back. But he got his daughters, but he couldn't get their husbands. He couldn't persuade them. But you know, this Rahab, she must have been a real zealot and persuasive and really had a fine way of dealing with people, because she got her parents. You read in chapter 6, we'll like that later. She got her parents, her mother, her brother, her sisters, all saved, all of them saved. Verse 20. So she said, "It shall come about anyone who goes out of the doors of your house into the street, his blood will be on his own head, and we shall be free. But if anyone who is with you in the house, this blood shall be on our head if anything happens to him," you know, if any hand is laid on him. "But if you tell this business of ours, then we shall be free from the oath which you have made us swear." She said, "According to your words, so be it." So she sent them away, and they departed, and she tied the scarlet cord in the window. She tied that same thing right where she let them out of the window. She tied it. They departed and came to the hill country, and they remained there for 3 days until the pursuers returned. Now the pursuers had sought them all along the road, but had not found them. Then the two men, only two spies. Joshua didn't send 12 spies. He only sent two. Then the two men returned, and they came down from the hill country and crossed over and came to Joshua, the son of Nun. Now, who did they report back to? They did not report back to the sons of Israel. They report back only to Joshua, the son of Nun. And they related to him all that had happened to them, including their time with Rahab. They said to Joshua, now here's the full report, "Surely the Eternal has given all the land into our hands. Surely He has given all the land into our hands. Moreover, all the inhabitants of the land have melted away before. They're already terrified. I'm going to bring you a report. We got it from the woman there. The people there are already terrified of us. It won't be long. We should go in and take it. Well, this is our land, and God has given it to us. So, I mean, once again, very encouraging, very much encouraging. And by the way, here's how the New English Translation reads Joshua 2 and verse 15. Then Rahab let them down by a rope through the window. Her house was built as part of the city wall, and she lived sort of in that wall. So they had this rope that she did. And there are other places where people sort of lived in the wall. I want you to notice Acts chapter 9, where they let Paul down. Acts 9 and verse 20. But his disciples took him by night and let him down through an opening in the wall, lowering him in a large basket. When Paul related this in the book of 2 Corinthians chapter 11, here's how Paul wrote. In 2 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 32, in Damascus, the ethnarch under the Aretas, the king, was guarding the city of the Damascenes in order to seize me. And I was let down in a basket through a window in the wall. And so I escaped his hands. Paul said they were coming after me, but I escaped his hands. I was let down through something in the window. So she had tremendous zeal, this woman. Okay? This woman had tremendous zeal. Rahab was able later to convince, I said, her father to believe, her parents, because let's take a look at Joshua chapter 6. Verse 23. I'm just real quick, a couple of verses here. So the young men who were spies went in and brought out. This is after. Now chapter 6 is where the walls come tumbling down, you know, all that. So the young men who were spies came in and brought out Rahab and her father and her mother and her brothers. And all that she had, her brothers, sisters, and all that she had, they also brought out all her relatives. Everybody, you know, hey, Aunt Jean, hey, Aunt Sarah, hey, you know, come on in here, you know, we're going, and place them outside the camp of Israel. She was able, she got all her family. You know, I'm not kidding you. There's coming. These people are coming, and they are the true God, servants of God. She was able to persuade them. Let me read that in the New American Standard Version. Then the two men returned and came down. Okay, this is different. I'm sorry. So here are her relatives. I thought I was reading the same places. All right. Here we come now. I think we don't have time for that. Well, next time we're going to talk about chapter 3. Chapter 3 of Joshua, the crossing of the Jordan, this is one of the most miraculous events ever. You know, the crossing of the Red Sea was a powerful, miraculous event. It's probably the greatest event. But this has got to be probably the second greatest event and the way to the promised land. This is unbelievable. And in chapter 3, verse 1, the very first thing. Then Joshua rose early in the morning. He didn't wait. He's ready. And all of the sons of Israel set out from Shittim, and they came to the Jordan, and they lodged there before they crossed. Now here they had to come to the edge of the Jordan and lodge. How long did they lodge there? 3 days. At the end of 3 days, the officers went through the middle of the camp, and they commanded the people, saying, when you see the Ark of the Covenant of the Eternal, your God, with the Levites, the Levitical priests carrying it, then you shall set out from your place and go after it. So they were going to be led by God, symbolically God was in, where does God sit? Between the cherubim. What's the Ark of the Covenant look like? It's got the cherubim on either side, tables of the covenant, tables of the Ten Commandments. The priests are going to carry that. They're going to carry that Ark of the Covenant. The people are going to follow it. And I want you to notice how far they have to leave it. However, in verse 4 it says, when you see the Ark of the Covenant of the carried by the Levitical priests, then you shall, you know, move from your place, set out, and go after it. However, there shall be between you and it a distance of 2,000 cubits by measure. That's close to 1/2 mile. Okay? We're going to watch. You know, it's a little shorter than 1/2 mile, but you know, close to 1/2 mile. Here goes the Ark. Here go these priests. Okay, there they go. Now, why would you keep that distance from the Ark of the Covenant? Why are the people are not allowed to come within that distance? Number one, if people are right up against it, the rest of the people back there can't, you know, how many people do you think are going? Hundreds of thousands. How many people came out of Israel? I mean, out of Egypt? Close to 3 million. We only 600,000 men and all their equipment, says the book of Numbers. So it was a huge number. So in order to go, all the battle array, all the men who are soldiers going to battle array, don't get too close because the others can't see it. Let's all watch the Ark. Everybody can watch it, see it. It's way down there. That's number one. Don't run up against it too far. So the priests are leading. God is leading these people with that Ark of the Covenant. And miracles happen when God is with you. We'll talk more about the crossing on our next sermon.